Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, January 17, 2019. We'll start with a story that is titled, Familiar Faces, Half of Probationary Firefighters Join Family on the Department. And there is a picture of Danville Public Safety Director Larry Thomason talks at City Hall Wednesday morning as part of the probationary firefighters swearing-in ceremony. Six new firefighters were sworn in during the ceremony. And this is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. Three probationary firefighters will be joining their dads on the Danville Fire Department. Wednesday morning saw six probationary firefighters sworn in before a crowd inside City Hall, including family and friends. It's been a little more than 5 years since the last firefighter was hired. That date was November 20th, 2013, according to Danville Fire Department Captain Tim Hendricks. Hendricks is now happy to see his son as one of the six firefighters to join the department. Two more probationary firefighters will be sworn in later this month to replace retirements. The six probationary firefighters sworn in on Wednesday were Devin Hendricks, Brandon Hudson, Jordan Sheehan, Caleb Thompson, Lucio Torres, and Zachary Wachla. In addition to Devin Hendricks being Tim's son, Zachary is firefighter Matt Wacklaw's son, and Brandon is Lowell Hudson's son. The fire department has seen other generations of family members following in their family members' footsteps. Hendricks, whose stepson Brock Dew also is on the fire department, said it will be great having Devin with the department also. Devin, who's 25, had been a member of the Bismarck Community Fire Protection District while on eligibility list for the Danville Fire Department. Devin thanked his family and friends and said it's been a long journey and he's happy to be here today. Hudson said he too is happy to have the opportunity to serve on the department. Among those who Thompson thanked was Kickapoo Fire Protection District's Rory Lester for pushing him along the way. Torres thanked his wife for pushing him along the way and said he's ready to join the department. Zachary Wachlaw said growing up, his dad, Matt, was his biggest role model and he's happy to follow in his dad's footsteps. Devin Hendricks, Zachary Wachlaw, and Sheehan have completed academy training already. The six new firefighters are coming onto the department under the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Emergency Response, known as SAFER, grant. The Danville City Council in October voted to accept the $1.1 million grant. The city's share over the 3 years of the grant is 25% each of the first 2 years and 65% the third year of the firefighter salaries. The estimated amount is $710,575. The Firefighters Union has said the city could save about $900,000 to over $1 million in overtime reductions. Two additional firefighters per shift will help with overtime incurred when there are vacations and other times firefighters are gone. In addition to the swearing-ins, there also were promotion ceremonies for firefighters Donald McMasters to assistant chief, Aaron Marcotte to captain, and Chris McMahon to lieutenant. January 30th, we'll see the remaining two new firefighters sworn in. On the police department side, probationary police officer Ryan Elmer also was sworn in Wednesday. Okay, the next story is titled, Man Arrested in November Shooting, and this is written just by a staff reporter in Danville. Danville police have arrested a man in reference to a shooting back in November of 2018. Commander Joshua Webb announced via a press release that Gary A. Cunningham, 21, of Danville, was arrested at 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday on an outstanding Vermilion County arrest warrant. He has been charged with unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon with a bond of $100,000. Police responded November 18th to the 1400 block of East English Street, where two victims of gunshots wounds were discovered. Daniel R. Jackson died as a result of his wounds, and the second victim, a 20-year-old man, was treated for life-threatening injuries. The second man did survive. During the investigation, detectives learned there was a party at the residence, and during the party, an altercation took place between several men. Shots were fired by two groups, according to the release. Jackson and the second victim, both bystanders, were struck by the gunfire. Cunningham was identified as one of the men who fired shots. He's currently held at the Danville Public Safety Building, awaiting a court appearance. Further inquiries into the arrest and charges against Cunningham can be directed to the Vermilion County State's Attorney's Office. Anyone with information is asked to call Danville Police at 431-2250, or you may call Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 446-TIPS. Okay, another robbery story. A man takes cash from Dollar Store, and again by a staff reporter in Danville. Police are investigating an armed robbery Tuesday at the Dollar General store in the 1400 block of Bowman Avenue. Employees told police that around 6:37 p.m., a man armed with a knife took an undisclosed amount of cash from the register and fled the scene on foot. The suspect was last seen going westbound from the area. He was described as a black male wearing a red hooded sweatshirt and gray pants. He was about 5'11" tall, medium built, with black hair and brown eyes. There were no injuries reported. Danville police said the investigation into this incident continues. Anyone with information is asked to call the Danville Police Department at 431-2250, or you may call the Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 446-TIPS. And one more. Police arrest man in November shooting. Again, a staff reporter in Danville. Danville police have arrested a man in reference to a shooting back in November of 2018. Police Commander Joshua Webb announced via a press release that Gary A. Cunningham, 21, of Danville, was arrested. And I think this is a double story here, so hang on a second. Okay, we'll try this again. That story was in twice for some reason, so we'll go to another one. It's called Arbitrator Rules on First City Inspector Contract. This is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. An arbitration decision on city inspector's first contract sided with the city on issues of base wages, lead inspectors or lead inspectors in the term of contract, and the union proposal on general wage increases, but for a 3-year term. The Danville City Council Tuesday night, with a vote of 9-4, with Ward 1 Alderwoman Brenda Brown absent, approved a collective bargaining agreement with International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 538 that covers 6 city inspectors. Ward 1 Alderman and Acting Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said, "I would like to note on behalf of myself and the rest of the council that we believe the raises provided were outrageous and unfair. However, because it is arbitration and because we've been dealt this hand, I think there is reluctant support from most of us." Mike Arbuckle, Local 538 Business Manager, said 2 code enforcement inspectors have been there's a fairly long time, and 2 others were basically at base wages. They were trying to get the inspectors more in line with the city study showing comparable city salaries for inspectors. Arbuckle said the salaries still are on the low end of the study. Arbuckle said in reality, the increases aren't as high as they appear, as the inspectors hadn't gotten 2% salary increases as other employees have the last couple of years. Arbuckle added about why they wanted a 4-year contract. They will already be in the 3rd year as the contract runs through May of 2020. IBEW Local 538 started representing 4 code enforcement inspectors, 1 building inspector, 1 electrical zoning inspector, and a vacant plumbing inspector position in May of 2017. The city only uses a part-time plumbing inspector as warranted. Contract negotiations began about June of 2017. According to the ruling, the parties met 13 times and were able to agree on all issues except wage increases for current bargaining unit members, base wage rates for potential new hires, and the length of the agreement. In May of 2018, the union requested mediation. Mediation wasn't successful, so the parties advanced to the arbitration, according to the arbitration award ruling. It further stated the arbitrator in this case can only increase the bargaining unit's compensation effective May 1st of 2019. It cannot award back pay due to the mediation timing and the city's fiscal year. A city cash flow report shown at the time of the October 2018 hearing projected the city ending this fiscal year on April 30, 2019, with a negative $184,721. The city also argued there is no evidence the salaries are inadequate to retain the inspectors once hired or have created a revolving door of employees who are not fit for continued employment. Other city employee unions have had general wage increases of 2% yearly. The union maintains that in comparison to external public sector employees' salaries, the employee earned less than most. The salaries are also below private and public sector peers in a private study the city had conducted. Also, other city union contracts contain longevity pay increases, and when taken into account, the union's proposal is more reasonable, the union argued. The bargaining unit hadn't received a raise in the last two fiscal years. The union has asked for a four-year contract instead of the city's proposed 3 years to see how the agreement works and what needs adjusting. The arbitrator decision stated the city's argument about ability to pay doesn't carry much weight with six employees. The union proposed 4% general wage increases for inspectors Rick Brown, Jim Meharry, Stephen Christman, and Paul Stork, an 11% increase for Inspector Don Cruz, and a 7% increase for Inspector Kenny Harden. In years 2 through 4, 2% increases were proposed. The city had proposed 2% each year of the three-year contract. The arbitrator sided with the union on the general wage increases, but for a three-year contract. The decision stated the general base wage increases actually represent increases for the past 2 years, too. In addition, base wages will stay the same during the contract, and there will be no lead code enforcement inspector or lead building inspector or lead building code inspector that would be paid $2 more per hour, as the union proposed. In other businesses, at Tuesday night's city council meeting, the council heard from the Vermilion County Land Bank's Pat O'Shaughnessy. He said the Sager campus site still needed OSF healthcare approval this week to be finalized as land bank owned for future development. He also said Soul Garden Recovery Center would be using the building on Fairchild Street that OSF also is putting in the hands of the land bank. In addition, the land bank is in the process of selling its first rehab on East Main Street. They also heard Williams say Community Improvement Superintendent Steve Lane will be making a presentation in Springfield next week for the state grant the city applied for to make Ellsworth Park improvements. The city hopes to hear back on the Illinois Department of Natural Resources grant by spring. They also heard City Comptroller Shelley Scott say a first draft of the city's proposed 2019-20 budget will be coming to aldermen on February 5th. She said changes in the first draft will include updated union contracts, budget cuts, and new revenue proposals also will be presented to address about a $200,000 deficit. They also reviewed and accepted the city's and Danville Mass Transit's audits, and they also approved an agreement between Greyhound Connect Bus Service and the Danville Mass Transit. They also approved an amended contract for the Oregon Street Bridge repairs, and they amended the sanitary sewer budget. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Meddy Mike Adeli, 84 of Oakbrook, Illinois, passed away. In visitation is from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday, January 18th, with funeral service at 6:30 p.m. at Sullivan Funeral Home at 60 South Grant Street in Hinsdale, Illinois. Private family interment at Bronzewood Cemetery. Charles F. Dyer, Jr., 78, of Danville, Illinois, passed away peacefully January 12th at his daughter's home in Wisconsin. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Sunday, January 20th, at Sunset Memorial Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Celebration of Life will be at 11 a.m. Monday, January 21st at Bethel Lutheran Church at 901 West Fairchild Street in Danville. Officiating the service will be Pastor Ed Stone. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made in Charlie's name to Bethel Lutheran Church at 901 West Fairchild, Danville, Illinois, 61832. Richard Earl Biggs from Danville, Illinois, passed away on December 27, 2018. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday, January 19th at Central Christian Church. In lieu of flowers, donations in Richard's memory in Operation Smile would be appreciated. Donations can be made at www.operationsmile.org. Christine Carucci, 80, of St. Louis, Missouri, formerly of Westville, passed away peacefully at Evelyn's House Hospice Care, located near St. Louis, on January 12, 2019. A celebration of Chris's life will be at noon on Saturday the 19th at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel at 414 South State Street in Westville, with Father Deuce officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday prior to her service at the funeral home, with a rosary service to be at 11:45 a.m. She will be laid to rest in St. Peter and Paul Cemetery in Westville. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made in Evelyn's House Hospice Care, 1000 North Mason Street, Mason Road, Creve Coeur, Missouri, 63141, and their phone number is 314-996-8100. John Richard Randolph, 69, passed away at 12:05 a.m. Saturday, January 12th. A celebration of life service will be from 5 to 8 Thursday, January 17th at Ridgeview Baptist Church at 3838 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Please feel free to come and share laughs and food and memories with John's friends and family. And William Isaac Richards, 91, of Danville, passed away at 9:21 a.m. January 14th at North Logan Healthcare in Danville. Visitation will be from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. on Friday the 18th at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. Service will follow at 11:30 a.m. at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home. Burial to follow at Danville National Cemetery with honors by American Legion, Post 210. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Okay, the next story is titled Archers Take Aim at DHS Tournament, and this is written by Carol Roem in Danville. More than 600 archers from around the state are expected to participate in Danville High School's fifth annual archery competition, the ULLR Classic, this Saturday in the DHS Field House. Opening ceremonies start at 8:50 a.m. with the national anthem, and the first fight is at 9 a.m. Awards will be presented following the seventh and final flight time that starts at 3:30 p.m. Lieutenant Colonel Retired Timothy Merritt, DHS Junior Reserves Officer Training Corps, known as JROTC, Senior Army Instructor, said representatives from the four military branches will shoot the first ceremonial arrow during opening ceremonies. The public is welcome to attend and watch the competition. A free will donation will be asked at the door. Concessions also will be available, and a military color guard will present the organizational colors. The parents of the archers who will run the concession area will sell pulled pork sandwiches, hot dogs, pickles, nachos, popcorn, candy, and assorted beverages. In addition, chances will be sold for a drawing to give away gift baskets. We have had donations given to us by businesses in Danville that we've wrapped up into a gift baskets, Marriott said. Also, there will be coolers and other items given away by the recruiters of the various military branches. The DHS JROTC also will be selling custom-made T-shirts at the event. We will be selling T-shirts that my senior class tie-dyed and that have the ULLR Classic 2019 logo on them for $10, he said. The funds raised during the competition will go to support the DHS JROTC, which was established at the high school in 2013 and has 165 cadets this school year. JROTC's sole purpose is to motivate young people to be better citizens and to help them get into college. We also use the money to pay entrance fees and accommodations to go to other tournaments and to buy new targets and equipment, Marriott said. 600 archers can take a toll on the targets. The money also comes back to the JROTC program, he said. The ULLR Classic spans over 7 hours and last year brought several hundred spectators into the community. Three divisions, elementary, middle, and high school levels, will participate in the competition that is sanctioned by National Archery in the school's program. 24 DHS archers, who are also JROTC cadets, will participate in the competition, while other cadets and parents will serve as blind judges. I would like to start a middle school team, Marriott said. That way we could get more 8th graders interested. The National Archery in the Schools program, which has partnered with the JROTC and will score the competition, was developed to serve specific educational purposes and to help educators who are looking for ways to improve student motivation, attention, behavior, attendance, and focus. Archery helps develop micro and macro motor ability, as well as listening and observation skills. Schlarman Academy, which has an active archery program, will loan 27 targets for the ULLR Classic. Marriott said the JROTC has its own 20 targets that it will use for the event. With 47 targets and 2 archers per target, 94 archers will be at the line at the same time, he explained. 18 elementary, middle, and high schools will participate in the competition that is composed of 7 flights, each an hour long. Every flight starts on the hour from 9 a.m. to noon, and then after break from 12:30 to 4:30, Marriott said. Following the final flight, an award ceremony will take place around 5 p.m. for the top 10 archers in each division and the top 3 teams in each division. The teams participating are Aldi E. Stevenson High School in Lincolnshire, Armstrong Ellis Grade School, Armstrong Township High School, Canton High School, Canton's Ingersoll Middle School, Centennial High School in Champaign, Danville High School, Georgetown Ridge Farm Elementary, Middle and High Schools, Gifford Grade School, Jefferson Middle School in Champaign, Next Generation School in Champaign, Potomac Grade School, Roberto Clemente High School in Chicago, Schlarman Academy, St. John's Lutheran School in Mattoon, and Woodruff Career and Technical Center in Peoria. We're one of the largest tournaments around, Marriott said. Archers who participate in the ULLR Classic and other National Archery in the Schools program competitions will have the opportunity to advance to the state competition in April in Springfield and the national competition in May in Kentucky. Next story is Hoopston Council limits participation, written by Carol Hicks in Hoopston. City Council members unanimously passed a resolution Tuesday stating the policy of the city regarding participation in private tributes and recognition. This policy states it will be the policy of the City of Hoopston that the city will spend no taxpayer dollars and in general be uninvolved in sponsoring non-city government tributes, recognitions, and the like. In other council business, Alderman Bill Goodwine will meet with engineer Mike Streff to write specifications for repairs for the wall and holes on the building that was east of the Williams Building. The Williams Building was demolished, but the connecting wall was left and repairs were not completed. Mayor Bill Krusenberry commented, "The city street sweepers was in need of a major repairs." Wade Gocking, Street Alley Parks, told Krusenberry he has enough in the budget for the repairs of $12,000, but needed authorization to make the needed repairs. Authorization was given. Krusenberry also discussed the city possibly making a contribution to the fireworks and doing a fundraising event to help defray costs. Carl still was donating $25,000. He added the contract for the fireworks was back to the July 3rd this year. Well, kind of a slow news today, so I'm going to read a story about the Illini crushes Golden Gophers. Illinois plays strong all game for first Big Ten win, and this is written by Jim Cotter in Champaign. Any University of Illinois men's basketball team fan knew sooner or later that a performance like this was coming. Io Dosunmu led all scorers with 23 points, and the Fighting Illini finally put together two complete halves of basketball as they thoroughly outplayed the Minnesota Golden Gophers, winning handily 95-68 on Wednesday evening at the State Farm Center in Champaign. Illinois, who is 5-2, 1-5 in the Big Ten, only trailed for a short time, and that was early in the game. The rest of the time, however, the Illini had all cylinders firing as they took a 51-28 lead into the halftime locker room. Besides Dosunmu's stellar play, Illinois also received some quality play from Georgie Benzanishvili, sorry about that name, who had his finest game in his young collegiate career. He scored 20 points and grabbed 8 rebounds, stating his case for head coach Brad Underwood's answer for the post player that can play inside. Coach wrote a series of notes on cards and gave them to us before the game, and on mine was rebounding. As far as my inside game tonight, they were guarding us in the back. So Io, Trent, and the other guards kept feeding me the ball, and I kept putting it in, he said, after the game on his offensive output. Rebounding was a concern of Underwood's heading into the game, and he remarked on Tuesday that the Illini would need to put their gloves on to compete with the likes of Amir Coffey and Jordan Murphy. Illinois answered that challenge in a huge way, out-rebounding the Gophers 36-20. Six and holding Murphy to just 3 rebounds on the night. It's great to finally get the monkey off our back and get the first conference win, because we have been capable of this for a long time, they said following the game on the team's win and what it does for the morale of the team. Trent Frazier added 15 points for the Illini, while Andre Felice also scored in double figures with 10. Andres is strong enough that he can finish, and the pace of the game really helped him out tonight, Underwood said regarding Felice and what he meant to the Illini in the game. Illinois has been close on several occasions, but a performance such as this can be the start of something when everything comes together. This was a night when everything started to click. We got some good stops early, which helped us out quite a bit, Underwood said, following the game on his team's overall performance. With the student body back in full force for the first time in Big Ten this year, the crowd made a difference, and the players felt fed off that excitement, something Underwood took notice of. It was a really good game time. They play again on Sunday with Iowa is set for noon and will be televised on the Big Ten Network. The game will also be broadcast on WDAN AM 1490 and WDNL FM 102, as well as statewide on the 47-station Fighting Illini Sports Networks. Finally, one. Just a minute left, so I'll just run a couple of community briefs. Art League planned session. The Danville Art League's January Color Splash is a special 2-for-1 art acrylic art. Acrylic paint taught by Carol Garver from 6 to 8:30 on January 25th. Each person will complete one canvas. When the two canvases are put together, they complete a painting. Cost for this is $35. All materials are provided along with refreshments. Register by stopping at Art League at 320 North Franklin Street, 9 to noon Tuesday through Saturday, or calling 442-9264. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, January 17th, 2019. Try to stay warm and dry. It's really wet out there, and hopefully we don't get that big storm again this weekend and get snowed in. So anyway, I hope you all have a good week, and I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.